You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, this is Deep Tran.
I'm Jose Solis.
And we're your token theater friends, people who love theater so much that, you know, we took another break. I apologize for that. This time it was my fault because I had to go hiking. And you cannot edit a podcast while you're hiking because there is no internet reception.
I mean, you should apologize. We already give them enough.
Hey, we have plenty of stuff on the website. Jose wrote a beautiful article about an outdoor immersive performance.
Couldn't go to the performance because I had a migraine.
I know. Sad. I couldn't go to the performance because I was in the woods. Like Little Red Riding Hood.
Or Taylor in folklore. What's that cover called? The Out in the Woods or whatever? What's it called?
Oh, I think... No, Out of the Woods is one of her songs.
Are we out of the woods? Yeah, are we out of the woods? Are we out of the woods? Are we in the clear?
We are in the clear because the news that we've been waiting for has finally arrived.
Which news?
We're going to have a Tony Awards this fall. Yay?
Nay.
We'll talk about which shows are eligible and not eligible very shortly. And who's our guest for today?
Our guest is Daniel K. Isaac, who you might know from his stage work and also because he's like a famous TV actor on Billions. And he's still pretty hot, right? We agree on that.
Yeah.
And he, you know, we basically shot the shit with Daniel. So we'll see that in a little bit.
Yes, but first off, we know some people have been messaging Jose saying, you all want us to talk about this.
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to talk about it. It was recently announced that the American Theater Wing and the Broadway League will be presenting the Tony Awards this fall. And because not all of the Tony Award voters were able to see all of the shows that had opened, they made the cutoff date for Tony eligibility February 19th, which, fun fact, is one day before the opening night of West Side Story, directed by Ivo van Hove, produced by Scott Rudin. Is this shade? I like to think it is.
Really? Oh, from the Tonys, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh.
Because this year, that means Scott Rudin doesn't have any Tony-eligible shows.
Well, where are his other shows besides that one? How long ago did Tequila Mockingbird open? Was that like 3 years ago?
That was 3 years ago. No, his other one was going to be Virginia Woolf.
Oh. Do you know which anyone never who saw opened. It?
It didn't even... Oh, wait, no.
It had previews.
No, it had previews. It was like in like the first week of previews,
like
right?
That. Yeah.
So how do you feel about us finally getting a Tony Award?
Us for what?
Ceremony.
Oh.
Huh?
I thought you meant like us. I'm like, okay, sure.
Are we getting awarded? No.
I don't know. I got it months ago. We said that Broadway was lacking leadership right now, and that they're doing it finally out of, you know, like, they just, you know.
Might as well.
Yeah, that's like, it just proves how irrelevant these awards are and how meaningless they actually are. That they were, you know, like, forced to happen, basically, by, like, public opinion, probably, and, like, I don't know, like, probably ad. No, it's on Zoom, right? Whatever, they're not going to have that.
It's on Zoom.
It's going to be like, Tony's presented by Casper Mattress and Audible and The Great Courses. Have you ever taken one of The Great Courses? They're actually like really awesome. But anyway, I don't know. Like, it's just, it feels like a little bit of a joke. Like, I mean, this should have just happened, like, at some point in this, you know, like, earlier, right? Because that whole thing, like, where they're waiting for something to happen, to me, it always felt like just an excuse not to give, like, Adrian Warren and, like, Jeremy O'Harris and Robert O'Hara and, like, all, you know, the specifically black actors and artists who might have won Tonys. Like, I just felt like they just, oh no, we're, you know, like they were shoo-in. So they're like, let's wait until the white people are eligible to give them to them. And now you have like really, really sad categories where like, isn't like best actor in a musical just like Aaron Tveit and the
Danny Burstein?
No, the guy, no, because he's featured, right?
He's featured. Oh yeah, he is featured.
It's Aaron Tveit and Chris McIron from Percy Jackson, the Lightning Thief, the Percy Jackson musical, who is great. And he should win a Tony.
No, you brought up a really good point with the whole, like, oh, there's only two people in this category because not a lot of stuff opened, because this is how messed up, you know, the Tony Awards are. The reason not a lot of stuff opened is because most producers, they pile on all 15 shows to open in March and April. So because apparently Tony voters are old and they can't remember things they saw like 6 months ago, and they want it to be fresh in the Tony voters' mind. So they programmed 15 shows in March and April, which meant because Broadway closed on March 12th, 15 shows did not get to open. And so the categories for everything this year is really small.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you're unlucky enough to have opened in the fall, most of the time people won't remember. You don't get recognized because people won't remember having seen you because it's so long ago.
Bullshit. But it's the same for like all the awards, like the Oscars, the Golden Globes. Like it's the same nonsense. But actually, and I'm not being like, you know, I genuinely, have I ever talked about this on a show? Like I genuinely love The Lightning Thief, Percy Jackson musical, and it is the only book, I think, no, like the only score eligible from a musical. So if it's the only one, give it to Tony. Because remember how like I was so angry, like that show closed so early, and like I wanted like more kids to get to see it. Like I love that show. Did you ever see it in any incarnation?
No, I never got to see it. I feel like it was one of those things where, oh, I'm not a Percy Jackson fan. It's not in my demographic.
Am I a Percy Jackson fan? No.
No, no, that's not in your demographic. But you are a musical fan. You're a much bigger fan of musicals than I am.
Right. That's a good point. Are those pre-Harry Potter? No, everything's post-Harry Potter, right?
Everything's post-Harry Potter.
All right.
Except Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, that's like pre, like history.
Pre. Exactly. Exactly. J.R.R. Tolkien's not on Twitter, you know, talking about how he hates trans people.
Oh my god. Can you imagine that? No.
Oh my god. Yeah, I tweeted about how it would be so awkward if Harry Potter was still on Broadway, because then we'd have to have the conversation about, should we be supporting giving J.K. Rowling money?
I mean, she already has, like, all the money in the world. She's gonna be like, yeah. Wait. For a second, I had a brain fart, and I was like, why isn't Harry Potter on Broadway? So, there's no freaking Broadway, so...
But you had a good point, because what I'm thinking, why I wish they would do, and they probably will not do, is not do categories. Because when I was a judge on the Obie Awards, the fun thing about the Obie Awards is it's kind of like your high school yearbook where people pick like they make up the categories and they pick the person that best reflects the categories. You know, in high school, I was voted most likely to succeed by my peers.
Meanwhile, my senior class, we all hated each other so much that we didn't have a yearbook or a prom.
Oh my goodness. It's like high school seems so sad in Honduras.
I mean, it's teenagers. Like, you know, like teenagers have drama.
I know, but not have a prom.
It was like two.
I mean, I know you're not American. I know you're not American, and proms are a very American thing. But you should always have a party at the end of the year.
Because we always like, I went to an American school, so we had summer vacations. Like when it wasn't really summer, it was like a ton of bullshit. Also, anyway, back to the Tonys.
Yeah, but I don't think they should do categories. I think they really should just give it to the people who they think did a good job this year. So it's not you're not, so it seems like bad taste to have people be competing with each other now, since we're in a pandemic and you don't want to like knock other people down and make them, you know, campaign for their award, because it seems like in bad taste, considering, you know, we were trying to fight fascism.
I mean, the Oscars were happening during World War II. I don't know, because I'm thinking so much about how sad it was in, like, 1995, where Rebecca Luker and Glenn Close were the only nominees for Best Actress in a Musical, and Rebecca Luker knew she was not going to win. So having to sit there with, like, you know, like, the camera and, like, the big square, and you're like, I mean, Glenn Close is going to win this, and there's nothing I can do, and you still have to show up. Well, I don't know. It's, like, tacky, but also, yeah. No, it's tacky in every way.
Yeah, making people compete right now is tacky.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, making people compete, like, all the time is kind of tacky. Just give Tonys to everyone.
Yeah. Like, at the end of Mean Girls, you know, you take the Tony Award apart and just throw it out.
I mean, can you imagine the poor person who gets, like, the base? Like shit, this is super heavy. You get a Tony and a concussion.
Yeah. Hey, things that last forever, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I do hope that Jeremy O'Hara wins. And with this... No, there were a lot of plays.
Yeah, but I think it's between Slave Play and The Inheritance. I think it was always going to be between the two of those. I'm sorry.
Don't say that word. I cannot believe that thing has gone on for so long. Like, I thought once it was gone, it was gone. And... keep showing up.
You never forget it. It was 7 hours. It'll stay in your mind forever because it was 7 hours.
That explains the migraine.
It's in your life. It's in your bones.
Oh. I mean, I saw Slave Play, like, combined more than... No, not even. I would have to go see it, like, 5 times or anything. No. I don't like that.
Well, I know what I really wish the ceremony will do this year. I really wish that, and I tweeted about this, I really wish that Broadway producers and the Broadway League will, like, pool money together in order to help out theater artists who are out of work, because everyone's out of work right now. And even if you were okay 5 months ago when things shut down, not a lot of people, you know, the average person in America only has $400 worth of savings. And, like, not everyone is able to live off of their savings for this long unemployment. And so, and who knows when... They say it may come back in March 2021, but there's no guarantees either. So, like, where is the gigantic pool of money from, like, the Nederlanders or Drew Jameson? Because we know they give a shit ton of money to political candidates, but why are they not giving that money to Broadway technicians and front of house and the people who work in the industry?
Girl.
I know.
Yeah.
But that's what I wish. I wish it'd be about, like, hey, theater is not in a good place right now. Please give money. We are honoring this art form tonight. We're not competing. These are the people we love, and this is how you can give money to the people you love.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I love them that much. I mean, they're just their employees. I mean, Jeff Bezos wouldn't give, like, his employees, like, you know, like, overtime and, like, vacation time. And, like, he's made $80 billion during the pandemic, which is, like, fucking immoral. So, I mean, I'm actually sometimes, like, very grateful that I'm poor, because then I'm like, it means I can be a good person.
Yeah, but that's a shitty thing. I feel like most of the people who, you know, who support us or who, like, give to, like, these different, you know, donor drives are, like, the... people who are within a similar income bracket. They're not like the
really?
Scott Rudin of, you know, you know, it's like, I feel like the most generous people in society generally are, like, actually, like, people, lower middle income people.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, I get it. I thought you were saying, like, Broadway producers were, like, investing in us, which, like...
No.
No.
Well, technically, some of our Patreon subscribers...
Oh.
They give $10.
Oh, thank you so much to everyone. Yeah, you're right about that. Like, because I was talking recently about how people often give what, you know, what costs them, like, the least, like, you know, like, people, if it, like, I don't know. I think that if you lack something, that's what you should be giving. So, I mean, give it a buck. Makes a difference. So anyway, now I'm talking about, like, money and, like, giving and stuff. But what about the Tonys? How can we wrap the Tonys up? Like, who would you like to see, like, win?
I don't care. does any of it matter anymore? Yeah. I'm just in it for, okay, two people. I'm just in it, actually three people. I'm in it for Adrienne Warren to win, to get her Tony for playing Tina Turner. And I'm in it for Jeremy O'Harris to get his Tony for Slave Play, and Robert O'Hara to get his Tony for directing Slave Play.
Who would win, like, best actress in a play? Because I would love it if Joaquina...
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. Or Jane...
Which one?
Jane Alexander. Jane Alexander for...
Oh, the minivan.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. What's it called? Grand Horizons.
Grand Horizons, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, technically, this means that Audra could make it. No, that's... No, I'm kidding.
Oh, my... Remember that Remember that?
I love that play, so I wouldn't mind Audra winning something for it.
The only thing I remember about that play is her having sex with...
Michael Shannon?
With Michael Shannon at the top. That was about it, yeah.
Now, that's in my bones. Thank you.
Sexy Michael Shannon. Didn't think you'd ever see that, right?
I mean, you don't know my type. But anyway.
And I'm dreading having to, like, celebrate Moulin Rouge because, you know, I was really... Six was such a better musical, and I was just really looking forward to this year's Tony Awards and being able to honor Six, but we're not going to get to do that. It's probably going to be Moulin Rouge, which is just Broadway mediocrity on a budget.
I mean, I guess Aaron Tveit now is never going to be on our show. I'm like, I hope Chris McCarron wins, and you're like, garbage.
Garbage.
I mean, but we love
loud you. Garbage.
But we love you, Karen Olivo.
Yeah, yes, we love Karen Olivo.
You know what I dislike the most about the Tonys happening? That they make 2020 feel even longer for some reason, because they were supposed to happen in June. And now when they happen in the fall, I'm sure I'm going to have some sort of like, are we back in June?
Yeah, and when is it going to happen? There's no date yet. Like, if it happens before the election, it feels like it's drawing attention away from something that's really important, which is the election. But then if it happens after the election, depending on how the election goes, we may or may not be in a good place to want to watch it.
Girl, I mean, how many people do you think watch the Tonys? It's never going to take attention from you. Yeah.
It may. People are at home now. A lot of people watch the DNC. And, fun fact, the people who produce the Democratic National Convention are the same people who are producing the Tony Awards.
Ooh, Eva Longoria's host.
Julie Louis-Dreyfus, come host! You can make more Trump jokes. I'll listen to all of them.
Oh my god, the only thing worse than the Tonys happening, you know, at all, which, I mean, I want the people that we love to have awards, but the only thing worst would be if the DNC producers made the Tonys like a week-long thing. Can you imagine that?
But wouldn't it be fun if, like, I heard one of the actors in Inheritance is, like, taking a road trip and he's, like, in the national park somewhere giving acting lessons, so wouldn't it be fun if they made speeches, like, out in, like, the Grand Vistas of, you know, the Rocky Mountains or something? In my parents' house in Dayton.
I mean, I would watch that. But I only, you know, like, what's so sad about those Zoom awards is that no one, like, dresses up.
Oh, no, I'm really hoping, you know, I'm hoping people wash their hair and put a full bead on for this.
I mean, they won't. Like, two of the world's greatest injustices so far have been in 2007 when there was the writer's strike in Hollywood, and there were no Golden Globes, and Kate Blanchett won a Golden Globe that year. And it was a press conference. No dress. And then this year, when she wins the Emmy for Mrs. America, Zoom Emmys, no dress. So, oh my god, what else are you going to take from us, Lord?
I know. Or even if there's a dress, you'll only see, like, the top half. No one's panning.
Oh, did they still do that E-Manny cam?
send everyone like a multi-camera setup. It's like, we need every shot of your outfit right now.
Oh, I mean, they should. That's more important than the winners in the end. So anyway, wow, I really don't want to watch the Tony, so let's move on.
I still will, because, you know, I still...
You'll have,
like,
nothing
Daniel
else to
K.
do.
Isaac, you know, I need to continue to feel the connection to this art form, even if it's shows I saw a million years ago.
Yeah, that you didn't like. I didn't love anything that much of the eligible things. Did I? I mean, besides Slave Play?
Percy Jackson. You loved Percy Jackson.
Yeah, I loved it. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, at least I have a horse in each race.
Yeah. Oh, and Girl from the North Country is not eligible either, so that'll make you happy.
I mean, I saw it twice. Like, nothing about that show is going to make me happy anymore.
Knowing it's not eligible, and you might have to watch it again when Broadway reopens.
I mean... I'm getting ready. I'm getting settled for a long winter sleep over here. Like, did you know, like, oh my god, my doctor told me that back in October we're going to be back in lockdown, probably.
Yeah, yeah. Second wave, you know?
Yeah.
But remember to get your flu shot.
Already?
Well, yeah, they're starting to come out.
Oh god. I mean, so lockdown and the Tonys in October. No wonder we're going to have to watch them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's either that or, like, 24-hour political coverage, you know?
Ugh. Jesus. It's like, again, lesser of two evils.
Exactly, exactly. So, I hope people dress up, or at the very least, wash your hair.
Yeah. Get drunk.
Have your speeches ready. Yeah, yeah. I hope people are drunk. And I hope people show us where you're staying, you know? Give us a cribs tour.
Yeah, yeah. And the mani cam. And speaking of drunk mani cams... I wish. Let's go talk to Daniel K. Isaac. Basically, we shot the shed with him, right? Like, that's what you call this episode, and that's what it should be. Like, the official name.
Shooting the shed.
Yeah.
Featuring Daniel K. Isaac. Yeah.
He was so much fun.
Oh, yeah. I realized he and I live in the same neighborhood, so whenever he gets back from D.C., we're going to hang. Socially distance hang.
And, like, also our guests... Our next week's episode, The Neighborhood, right?
Yeah.
You're going to have to tune in to find out who they are. I'm kidding.
Yeah, exactly. And to find out where Deep lives. It's somewhere in Queens.
I'm sure you've said it before. But anyway, let's go talk to Daniel. And I hope you enjoyed this as much as we did, because we also were having cocktails.
Hi, Daniel. Welcome to our show. We're so happy to have you here. How's it going with you?
Good. Thanks. Thanks for having me. I've been listening to you guys all 10, is it? 9 or 10 episodes that are out on the new platform.
Thank you for remembering to resubscribe.
So, Daniel, before everything went to hell when the pandemic started, you were in the midst of shooting, what is it, season 5?
Season 5, yeah.
What happened? Like, do you remember what happened when they were like, no more episodes?
Yeah. We were just starting episode 8 of our 12-episode season 5. And I want to say I shot on that Tuesday, March 10th. And already by then, it felt like things were going to be closing down or pausing for some time. And we had actually built in a week-long spring break for the following week. And so the producers made the executive decision of, we'll just make your spring break 2 weeks instead of one. And then it ramped up. So on that Thursday, the 12th, we shut down for good. And I was also doing a reading by a playwright by Dan Giles at Ensemble Studio Theater. And so we were also rehearsing every day, wondering, is this the last day we get to rehearse? Will we make it to our one day of performances on the weekend? And of course we did not. And so that was a scary feeling that, you know, now we've just gone through 4.5 months of. But the producer said, you know, we'll see after 2 weeks. And after 2 weeks, they said, we'll assess the situation. Everyone stay in touch. And we're just texting each other and, you know, social media, loving one another while we wait and see.
What's Paul Giamatti's favorite emoji? No, I'm kidding.
I don't think I've ever received an emoji from Paul Giamatti. So
that sounds on brand. But I don't know that much about like what a Hollywood production schedule is like, or what vaccine is like 100%. But I heard that you can start filming you can start filming again in New York City, at least. And so have you been getting news about, like, when it might ramp up again for you?
You know, I've taken, so yes, Cuomo, I believe, allowed it in phase four starting at July 20th, I believe. And so filming has resumed. And I think, you know, my friend group who loves Drag Race assumes Drag Race 13 is filming right now. And I have other friends saying they're locked in hotel rooms at quarantining, waiting to test. And so I know it's happening, but for our show, I haven't heard anything. And the approach I've personally taken, I don't want to be the kid in the backseat of the car saying, are we there yet? Are we there yet? So I'm just asking no questions and just waiting. And I'll be pleasantly surprised when something happens.
Around the time that we first started talking about the idea of having you as a guest, you didn't, you know, we weren't even thinking about a specific project of yours to talk about. And then, like, we keep getting, like, press releases for, like, so many things, and you are in everything. So how did you go from this, like, okay, we're going into a two-week break, maybe, into you being in every podcast and, like, every...
It really is, you know, to reference your own episodes, Raul, as far as I saying how it feels like we can work as an actor again when we have these little projects, it has helped keep me sane to know I have this little thing. I have this Zoom workshop with Page 73. I have a week-long thing with Ensemble Studio. I have projects in development with Mayi Theater. Those, it makes me feel like the industry isn't, I know how much you hate hearing it's on pause or it's dead in the water right now. I've heard this recurring theme in your episode.
I feel called out right now.
No, but it was very good for me because I kept, you know, I kept posting, like, I miss theater. I miss the business. I hate that we're on pause. I hate that, you know, we're halted right now. And then I would hear your voices saying the industry is not on pause. It is figuring itself out in new platforms and new stories and new methodologies. And how about we celebrate that and actively seek it out and review that and praise it. And so that's helped me a lot with my grief of not sitting in the dark with a group of strangers coughing and on their phones while a piece of theater happens in front of me live and to seek out the other opportunities instead and celebrate my own opportunities I've been invited to.
But I mean, you can still set up like a Zoom call and have people cough while you watch something. That's like perfectly, you know, manageable, I think. Like you can arrange that. But, you know, can you run us through like some of the projects that you've done? Because it's difficult to catch up with you, to keep up with you these days. The ones that you can talk about, let us know so everyone can go find them.
Oh, sure. The first one I believe I did was one of the 24-hour plays, Viral Monologues. And it was very early on. And I think I agreed to do it before I was in a mental place where I could memorize a monologue in less than 7 hours and give a decent performance. And I went, I kid you not, I went crazy trying to do the best job I could for something that I thought would live online forever and be taken so seriously and was sort of like, I'm still an actor even though there's a pandemic happening. And I put so much pressure on myself. So I wouldn't say look for that monologue, but it's out there and I'm wearing a panda vest for no reason. So and then I just recently did my second monologue in the pandemic, which I'm sure certain actors have done so many monologues, but my new one is by Sylvia Corey for the Homebound Theater Project. And every dollar raised goes to No Kid Hungry. And they've raised over $100,000. And in this fifth edition, every dollar is matched to make it up to $20,000 matched, which is just amazing. What else? I did a workshop for Dan Giles of his play Mike Pence Sex Dream, which is just the most amazing title ever. Redid a virtual workshop of that, and I hope it continues on. I did one of the Pride play readings. I thought that I really love the Pride plays, and I got to participate last year too. And I just think what they're doing and giving LGBTQ plus voices this much attention and their own festival feels amazing. Because I always think it's weird that we as New York City don't have an LGBTQ plus theater company like About Face in Chicago or Diversionary in San Diego. And I would really wish that to be the case. So this festival feels like a step in that direction.
Yeah. Well, we've noticed that you're part of a book club, and I know you're also a playwright. So have you been taking this time to like get back into that part of your brain, the writing part?
Totally. I am in a long list of emerging playwrights whose first pieces were canceled or postponed because of the pandemic. But I did recently get to announce that the National Endowment of the Arts had supported this untitled gay sex and conversion therapy play of mine, directed by Ralph B. Pena, who's the artistic director of Mayi Theater Company. And so while our production is postponed indefinitely, I am very grateful that we've done a workshop and have pending workshops of that, as well as Mayi has turned around incredibly fast and said, how do we employ artists? How do we give work to actors and writers and designers in this time? Because it's certainly not going to be in an indoor theater. And they've created Mayi Studios, which I'm so in awe of how fast they've moved and how they're literally putting money where their mouth is. And I personally have been sustained by Mayi funds over this summer as they've commissioned work from me and I'm sure a slew of other artists of creating, I don't know what to call it, but digital plays or storytelling for this medium that is maybe just a little bit more elevated than Zoom or what the technology of Zoom is able to do. And so I'm cautiously optimistic about that future. And I've also been turning all of my plays into pilots or screenplays because it's a good exercise. I should have that portfolio and I don't. I stubbornly wanted to just be a playwright, but I think the industry of theater can't safely return live until we are post-vaccine. And so I have a little more faith in TV and film potentially being able to bounce back in small incremental ways. And I'd love to see storytelling that I write come alive there in this time and not think that I just have to wait for however many years before theater resumes. So,
right, because it's not paused. Remember, we're going to quiz you at the end, Daniel, to see if you have been listening to all the episodes for real.
Right.
And also, like, you should totally, like, take over and replace one of us, like, when one of us is sick. We're naming you, like, the official, you know, extra TTF.
Teacher?
Yeah. But, you know, but from all these things that are keeping you, like, you know, cautiously optimistic, what are some things that you really love that you want to bring into this new world if we ever are allowed to leave the house again?
Yeah, my first thought was equity and access as far as price is concerned. And so I feel like so much of the archives of theater or even the new pieces have been allowed to be seen across the country and the world for zero to, you know, X amount of less dollars than actually sitting in a theater. And I wish that kind of access could always be available for anyone to be able to see it. And I don't know how, but I hope that that practice and those statistics exist somewhere that people who normally wouldn't get to see Hamilton as the extreme example, got to see it. What does that age demographic look like? What does the color of their skin and where are they in the world getting to see that versus the rich tri-state area that got to see it or the people who flew in on their private jets and got to see it on Broadway. And I'd also love to see, I think, there's an immediacy to storytelling happening now, whereas I always remember this joke that Taylor Mack made in the 24-hour plays about how you come up with the idea of a play, you write said play, and then you workshop it, or you have a reading, and then you have a workshop, and then you have an out-of-town tryout to have another producer's reading, to have another in-town workshop, and then the off-Broadway run, and then maybe the Broadway run, and now 7 or 10 or 15 years have passed since the initial insemination of the idea of the project. And what does that do to the life that you were trying to breathe in there, or the question you were posing there, and is that relevant by the time the machinations of theater and the hoops you have to jump through are done, and it gets to be seen by the audience that maybe isn't even alive or is aged out of the generation it was trying to speak to, or all of those factors. I'm so excited by, here's a story, someone's written it, someone's acted and produced it, and here it is online. And as much as I miss, say, like high editing quality or reliable internet speeds in the midst of this, I'm so glad that stories are being told, and that they feel a little more urgent. Not saying I want pandemic-themed storytelling from here to Kingdom Come, but I am excited by any stories that feel alive and of the now that wouldn't have gotten this opportunity.
Since we have all been trapped at home for over 100 days now, like, what is it, like 150 days or something like that now, I am about to try out knitting for the first time, which is, like, bonkers. So I wonder what's, like, the nerdiest, like, you know, like, project at home that you've taken on, Daniel, during this really, really strange summer.
The nerdiest project I've taken on is organizing all of my playbills and scripts and papers. And I bought a second four-drawer filing cabinet so that I could fully put them in dividers and mark the years. And I even got those extra wide files versus the regular size green files that hang. That is my organized hoarding and a little bit about me that you might not have known. But in doing so, I got to pull out some fun old playbills that I thought we could walk down memory lane. And since it's almost my 11-year anniversary in New York, but I have playbills from 2009 forward to try to play with or show and tell with you guys.
Do it, but wait, how many playbills are we talking about that you currently own? Are we talking like the thousands?
Oh, okay. So I know that I own 25 full playbill binders, and I think they fit like 30 or so in there. And then I have files marking each year with non-playbill sized playbills, and that's takes up an
How did you afford to go to all those shows?
I learn every year that I do taxes that I don't spend my money on clothes as much as I think I do, on eating out as much as I think I do, or traveling. I really should travel with this money is what I've learned. And maybe I should have invested and, you know, bought property or something. I really spend all my money on tickets. And, you know, the IRS has audited me so many times before I could afford a professional accountant, because I think they look at how much research money I spend on tickets. But I do. And every time they audited me, all I did was scan my ticket stubs or like receipts to say, no, I have proof. And yes, I did go to all these shows. And one year I was feeling a little petty and bored that I just started to like talk about the things I spent money on for the auditor to have fun reading about. And I got my money back that year. So it's still, I've contested it every time.
Someone should build like a statue of you like in the middle of Times Square. It's like, you know, the man is like single-handedly keeping theater alive.
Well, I mean, I love my discounts. When I was younger, I would do the, you know, early morning lineups. I love TDF is so great, and you know, I love a good comp. Although once I could sustain myself as an artist, I try to not use comps and put money back into companies, because I don't know if this is 100% true, but I don't think any theater show makes its money back on ticket sales, like in an off-Broadway version, right? I think it's all it requires.
Not even Broadway shows sometimes.
Yeah, like museums don't exist on ticket sales. They exist on the like huge donors that fund it and government support and et cetera, right? So I try to do what little I can and at least buy the ticket for especially the off-Broadway companies that I really care about, you know, employ my friends or people who look like me, so.
Okay, show us your favorites. I cannot wait.
Okay, they're in the order of year, so I guess I pulled this out from 2010. This is David Cromer's Our Town, and that was at Barrow Street. And I know I just brought up the widest example ever, even though I'm talking it's to brag about inclusivity and diverse storytelling. But this one meant a lot to me because I loved seeing David Cromer on stage and this show, and then I got to work with him on Billions, and I thought that that's one of those, if you work in this industry long enough, things happen that you would never expect, and that's a huge piece of gratitude that, like, you know, A Band's Visit was one of my favorite shows of that season, and he directed that, you know, like, he, I think he's incredible, and just, like, a wonderful, fun human being. Brief Encounter, that was at St. Anne's Warehouse, transferred to Broadway. It had one of the coolest effects where you were watching the movie version within the show, and then the actors would step out of the movie curtain, and it was timed perfectly so that their bodies moved out of the curtain when they were leaving the screen. Little things like that blew my mind.
Yeah. Oh, that's one of, like, the first shows I paid money for in New York when I moved here.
And worth a dollar.
And that was one of the first shows that I think Damon Donohue, who we love, was in.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was, you know, Curly from the New Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah. I love that Oklahoma. Okay, this is 09, Circle Mirror Transformation, Annie Baker's play.
Ooh.
I knew nothing about it going in, and it reinvigorated my love of new play storytelling, and that intimate space in Playwrights Horizons is my favorite, and often where the people of color are relegated to as well, but also my favorite for its intimacy. And I got to act in there doing a play by Kyung Park, directed by Carlos Armesto, called Disoriented back in 2010 or 2011. So I'll always have a soft spot for that theater, as much as my bucket list is to work in the bigger theater downstairs as a political statement. This is from the 2012-2013 season. NATCO, National Asian American Theater Company, did Awake and Sing with an all Asian American cast. And I had studied Odets in undergrad, and I never thought I could see myself in an Odets play. And yet I love Odets's language so much. And the same goes for Tennessee Williams. And so to see a company whose mission was to take classics and put Asian bodies in them meant so much to me, and I hope and know that they'll continue to do it. And that one meant a lot. And it's full of friends that I just love. Okay, speaking of, like, old programs that you would save deep, this one's the Great Comet when it was at Ars Nova.
Oh, wow. You were there from the beginning. I wasn't even there then.
I didn't even know what I was going to see. I think my friend Kate Yu, maybe, a playwright, took me, saying, like, this is supposed to be good. And the night we went, I feel like Sondheim was sitting at another table. I don't think I'm making that up. I just remember thinking, oh, wow, he's here. That's a big deal. And the intimacy of it, you know, while they did an incredible job of transferring that to Broadway, also because I only sat on stage whenever I saw it on Broadway, I will always treasure the feeling of, they did this simple gesture of, you know, when you swirl your finger on a water glass and there's that sound, when 20 ensemble mates are doing that at the same time, that, like, goosebumps doesn't even capture what that feels like. And I think I'll always remember that moment and how special that was. Okay, I've made it to 2014. I'm trying to go along. New York Theater Workshop, Scenes from a Marriage. Mia Kotigbach, Rosalind Ruff, who was the last performer I saw in Help before we shut down. That was my last performance. I gotten the privilege to see. Susanna Flood, Tina Benko, just Alex Hurt. This cast was amazing. And did you get to see Scenes from a Marriage, either of you? They imagine New York Theater Workshop, where they divided it into three rooms, and you traveled between the three rooms for the first half of the play. And then at intermission, they lifted the walls of the rooms, and you realized that the audience was set in a circle. So the audience encircled the entire space, and then the last act was done in the round that way. Just amazing. And that, like, that Mia Katikbak could be a white-bodied person's mother. And Rosalind Ruff and Alex Hurt are in an interracial relationship, to me, does more to the story than just seeing white bodies on stage, or what I imagine. I haven't seen the movie, but I think it's a majority white cast there. So, I appreciated that. You can stop me whenever if this is boring.
This is so adorable. I feel like, even though you're like younger than me, I feel like this is like Auntie Daniel telling me about her adventures in theater. I am like,
you may be like the nerdiest person we've ever had.
I'll take it.
And like maybe nerdier than us even. Yeah. But I do want to ask you, I'm going to cut you off, but I'm just wondering, like, when did you realize like you were a nerd for this stuff? Because you grew up in Orange County like I did, and there wasn't exactly theater in Orange County.
I will credit my mom, my single mom, whom I have many issues with as far as like religion and politics are concerned. But my mom would do this thing every weekend where she opened the LA Times to the culture section to see what was available, especially what was free that was available. And when I was growing up, she worked at a bank that got a lot of comp tickets because her building was in downtown LA. Les Mis was my first musical. I saw Spelling Bee in San Diego when I was in college, and Sarah Stiles was touring there, and she's on Billions now, and was just in Tootsie, and that just... Billions has been my biggest like Venn diagram overlapper in life because it employs the most amazing theater actors. Oh, but to answer your question, Deep, I studied abroad for a year in London, and I took out a shit ton of loans, and I used them to buy theater tickets. And I will credit that London has amazingly affordable ticket prices for students. I didn't party. I never got laid in London. I could not get a date to save my life there. I hated being called Oriental. And I believe I saved all those playbills, but they're in storage in California somewhere. And I kept that nerddom, and I moved to the city, and I just tried to see as much as I could, as much as I could afford, as much as I could rush to. It feels like an inspiration. It feels like an education. And I like to be reminded of why I live in this city that is not a forgiving city at times and can be very challenging and difficult. But if I go to the Museum of Modern Art and then I can like go see a play and then go for drinks with friends, I'm reminded of I didn't even take a subway to do all those three things that people save up all year to fly here to do, or it's their one high school trip of the year that they get to go outside of their hometowns, and my hometown has all of it in my backyard, and I get to like, it's an excuse to hang out with friends who are on stage and then drink with them after.
Okay, now we're all gonna cry.
Well, this is the part of live theater that I miss, and that's there's nothing like that. Like Deep, the last time I saw you was at and it was one of the upstairs shows at Playwrights Horizons. And I can't remember the name of it at this moment, but I remember you sat like a row in front of me, and I thought, oh, Deep's here. And I would ask her out for a drink, but I know she's cautiously introverted. And so I'll wait till we're closer friends to ask her.
Daniel, no one knows I'm introverted. This is so amazing. I feel so seen.
Or like Jose, I saw you at Second Stage. that show where the U-Haul went through the wall, right?
Grand Horizon, yeah.
Yes.
Horizon
is an amazing effect of a U-Haul crashing through a wall. Hands down, amazing design there. Those are like, and I count you guys as friends and colleagues now, even more so. And my memory of that show is heightened by my memory of seeing you guys there and how we do that in theater lobbies, at intermissions, in line for the bathroom, or crowding around at the stage door after. And so there's nothing like that.
This is so beautiful. Like, I'm like, I don't know if it's the margarita or the heat or everything, but like, you're making me think that for you, you know, like one of the things that people often talk about when it comes to theater is that it's so ephemeral, right? And we see the performance and then it's gone. But what you're talking about is making me think of all your programs that you have saved for over a decade, almost as like, they're like snow globes where like you can grab them and like shake them. And then also you have like an impressive memory, by the way.
Yeah.
They're time capsules. And so I could never Marie Kondo them, even if I didn't necessarily like the show, because they're part of that chapter or that year or that experience, and those seasons inform each other. And like, as I went through these old playbills to see names of actors that I didn't know then and that now I've done a show with or a reading with or a TV show with, just is a testament to the like marathon that is our industry and the rewards that happen when you see it as a marathon and not a sprint. And I find that so rewarding. And I guess like theater is my church now. It is my community. It is, as much as, you know, we are in a moment of reckoning and accountability and tear it all down and rebuild it for the better state of evolution, I will always love this industry, and I think that's why I passionately fight for the changes that I believe can happen in this moment. And I'll remain cautiously optimistic there that we'll see a real change, so that my playbills aren't evolving from just all white casts to more inclusive casts, but that they'll all be inclusive and just diverse storytelling and just colorful and all sorts of bodies and identities represented on stage. And I think that's why I write to try to include that myself or actualize that world for myself. And
okay, if anyone from the government is watching or listening to this, now you need to find a vaccine just so this man can have more programs to add to his collection. Because this is like incredible. You made me miss being outside again, which is Thank you, Daniel.
Can I ask you something?
Yeah, please, anything.
Yeah. Can I ask you something about your mom? Because I'm in Facebook groups with other APIs trying to figure out how to talk to their parents about this moment right now. And so what have you, over the years, you know, you and your mother have disagreed about your sexuality. Yeah. And so like, what have been some tactics you've taken from those discussions that maybe other people can apply when they're talking to parents?
I will represent the side that I guess is not the happy ending, where my mother and I lived through the LA riots, and my aunt had a liquor store and my biological father had a car dealership, like a small, tiny car dealership. And while neither were completely destroyed, our neighbors, our church members, our colleagues' properties were damaged or irrevocably taken away from them. And that trauma has lived in my mom. And so it has been very difficult to talk about Black Lives Matter and about these protests, violent or nonviolent. And my mother has been the greatest example, and I think an illumination that might have occurred after our election in 2016 is how social media is a bubble or echoes what you want to see and mirrors what you want to hear, and whatever those algorithms are not necessarily exposing you to what other people may firmly believe is their truth. And my mother has always been the barometer for me of knowing what is very hard for me to navigate is that which is absurd and untrue fabrication or a lie that comes out of Trump's mouth or that comes out of his cabinet gets disseminated in Fox News or conservative news outlets and then somehow gets translated into Korean. And my mother listens to that, reads that, and devours it as truth and fully parrots that which Trump says or believes. Like, she'll say fake news in Korean. She'll say make America great again. She'll parrot these things that I find such heartbreak and feelings of contradiction in the fact that she is a cis woman, an immigrant, and a single parent, and she'll say, well, I worked harder, and she'll be spouting the model minority myth and putting down other immigrants, even though, like I recently learned, she came here because she was engaged to a man who was recently divorced, and that engagement might have helped her get her citizenship. So I call hypocrisy where I see it. She has this trauma from the LA riots, which is rightfully so. But the way she posts every video possible of black bodies looting places, and yet what I try to do is continue to engage and humanize and try to find points of empathy, not to diminish the black bodied experience in America, but to talk about how she herself had to work so much harder as an Asian body, as an immigrant, as a cis female in a world that was white, patriarchally structured, cis male favored, and non-immigrant, you know, nepotism favored. And if I catch her on a good day, we can rationally talk about this. And I got to talk to her about it when the Black Lives Matter protests were very high in numbers and enacting curfews in LA. I had gone to visit my mother and see her in the backyard and not stay with her, but, you know, wear a mask and try to touch base with her. And she would say, you know, when I was younger, I took you to the Martin Luther King Jr. parade so that you knew what the black bodied experience was in America. We owe them as immigrants and for opening doors and allowing us to have rights that we didn't have. And it is on their bodies that we do have them, on their blood that we do have them. And she can say that and beautifully mean it and also turn around and that same evening post a video of black bodies looting some small business. And that contradiction exists in her. And all I've tried commenting on every single one of those. I've tried reporting it to Facebook to get the original seed of it deleted. I know my mother's password, so I could be as petty as to delete it myself, but I will, you know, and my therapist is like, I gave my mother a credit card to support her a year or two ago. And he's always like, you could revoke her credit card and you could take her car away and try to do these things that would be much harsher. But in the same way, I imagine parents let their children go to formulate their own beliefs. And while I question the validity of truth and while we live on opposite sides of a liberal conservative binary, I try to continue to engage and hope that I catch her on a good day rather than in the same way that my mother disowned me for being gay and then it took us a long time to figure out how to have a relationship with each other, but it requires immense amount of compromise in both of us. I highly encourage people to not disown their parents or disown those who don't share the same beliefs as them, so that you don't become further trapped in a bubble or echo chamber of what you believe in or feeling your own values reflected in your immediate circle. And while that is a source of safety and comfort, and I do believe that protection is necessary, I also believe in knowing what, quote unquote, the other side has to say. And rather than isolate ourselves from them, to engage. And it takes an immense amount of patience or a cocktail in hand or a well-timed workout right after or before for some endorphins or whatever you need to do for your mental well-being, please do that. But I think to engage is more important than not, especially in this time where we are less than 100 days out from the election. And rather than please don't follow me if, or I will cancel you if, I'd rather us try to lend the generosity and find some common ground. And it can be found there, even if, like in my mother, it will not seem like that that can be retained long-term or fully applied in the everyday. Maybe some part of it gets through. And her vote for Trump won't matter in California anyway, so I will assuage myself with that. Or my vote will always balance hers out. And there is the definition of balance in the universe in one family.
Daniel, thank you so much for spending time with us and for having a drink with us and for showing us your favorite programs. That was very special. Plug anything that you need to plug and let our viewers and our listeners know what are you doing next, because you're like the busiest person in quarantine, I think.
Well, thank you for saying that. Inside of it, I don't feel that way, but thank you. I'm at www.danielkisaac.com. That's ISAAC. And at Daniel K. Isaac on Instagram and Twitter. So I'll be posting whatever is coming up. But look out for things on Mayi Studios. And there's 5 seasons or 4.5 seasons of Billions if you want to binge 55 episodes. That's 55 hours of escape with some of your favorite New York theater actors amazing guest starring roles. And I also love this show, the other two that I did on Comedy Central, and the first season of that is available to binge as well. So I point to those things, and if anyone has Quibi, I'll have a Quibi series coming out in the fall or guesting on one of those. But I don't know who has Quibi, but save your free trial for the fall whenever this show comes out.
Jose, oh my God, you can explain to Jose what Quibi is, because he still does not know.
I don't know what a TikTok is. All I know is that the president is trying to shut it down. So those still sound like made up words to me, but you know.
Quibi is Quick Bites, and that just always makes me laugh, that Quick Bites as a TV show. And the same that I'm sure podcasts or Audible books are struggling because people aren't commuting, I think Quibi has massively been hurt by the lack of commutes, but we'll see if they can rally people to all the stories that they've called there and produced, because it was an access point that allowed for other storytelling to happen that, you know, the traditional networks weren't doing. So I'm going to root for the underdog and see what happens.
Wait, what's a Quibi show that you're doing?
It is called The Expecting, and it is directed by Mary Harron, who directed American
Psycho.
Yes, which, like, I don't, you know, I'm sure there are many examples to sexism in the industry I can point to, and I don't mean to speak for her, and it's not that she's ever said this, but if I look at someone who directed American Psycho, they should have directed so many other movies that are of that canon and of that cult popularity and blockbuster standard, and she has a great resume, but it should be better. And I will stand as a cis male and say that's sexism and unfair, and I had an amazing time working with her, and all the more reason that I would love to support that Quick Bite show, The Expecting, directed by Mary Harron, whom I love and geeked out on a theater podcast last minute. So,
are you wearing clothes in that show, or is it like Christian Bale in the opening sequence of American Psycho?
I am fully clothed in that show. I am naked in a web series called Mercy Mistress about a Chinese-American dominatrix, which is also a random plug for a web series to throw out.
Wow, you wait to the last minute of the show to, like, plug your BDSM web series?
Nudity doesn't bother me, and I think sex positivity, if you can't tell, is a very important thing I'd love to spread, and so... that show was amazing. I only remembered it now because someone with a foot fetish account reposted a clip and tagged me. And I thought, oh, that I really loved working on that web series. I hope that there's something else to binge watch during this time of quarantine.
So we can have Daniel all the time during quarantine. So thank you once again, Daniel.
Thank you.
We'll either see you on Zoom or in the theater soon.
Perfect. We'll have another happy hour soon.
But we love people bearing it all during this time. You know, it makes us feel so close. Like, we're all friends. We're all in this event together. Even if we're separate, we are emotionally together.
Yeah. Don't say that, because, like, if someone hears you, they're going to, like, ask us to be on Broadway Bears next year.
I support you. Going back to the gym to get ready for Broadway Bears.
You want to send me back to the gym? There's like freaking COVID at the gym. Did you see? Wait, weren't like gyms supposed to open like Monday?
Yes, after they've been inspected. They haven't had time to inspect all the gyms yet.
Can you imagine when they go see the locker room at like every gym, basically?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta be fat forever.
You've gotten so skinny.
That's because I don't get hungry when it's so hot.
Yeah, and I don't get hungry when I'm depressed. So, yes, we're all getting to our goal weight during quarantine, whether we want to or not.
And if this ends, double it.
Carbs for days and we're outside again.
Oh, my God.
Speaking of doing things together, here's something you can do with other people. Do you want to tell them about how they can join our Patreon?
Oh, I thought you meant our sex podcast. Our sex therapy podcast. Sure. So we love all the support that you give us, and we love when you share stuff. And, you know, I mean, we love all of you, basically. Did you see how cool it is? For example, all of you who are patrons and patron get your own credit at the end of the video, like a movie. And it's like the coolest, like, you know, yeah, credit sequence of all time. It's like, oh my God, I'm like, oh, that person. I'm like, oh my God, that person. Anyway, like, we are the least cool people in all the thing. So, you know, like, you can give us a buck, give us $5, give us $10, whatever you want. And we send you goodies every week. And we send you a newsletter, and we send you Q&As that you don't get to see or listen to. And what else do we give them? I mean, we know that you don't really care about what we give you, because you know that we're doing work that means a lot to people like you. Okay, now I sound like Big Bird. No, but I mean, like, we're doing all this for you, and we want to make all of you proud, and, you know, tell us what you want us to discuss, and invite us to your shows all over the country.
Yes, that's been the great thing about doing this podcast with you, is like getting to talk about shows like shows in Texas and shows in Oregon. And there's going to be even more shows because we're going to be inside for the foreseeable future. So invite us to all the shows. And I'm really hoping right now, actually, like if someone wants to do a show in Astoria Park or some park in Queens that's not going to take me an hour to get to, let me know. I will go. Maybe I'll write about it.
I'll do my one-man version of Evita just for you by the pool.
On the fire escape. On your fire escape.
That shit looks like shady. Like, I'm not going to climb in there. Yeah, so thank you for supporting us and for, you know, let us know what you like, listen, what you don't like, and make your money, you know, worth it.
And, you know, don't forget, we have a website, tokentheaterfriends.com, where we post articles, interviews, reviews. We write a lot. We do a lot. I'm very proud of our writing. I think it's some of the best writing either of us have done yet. And what else? Don't forget to review and rate the podcast so it goes up in the iTunes algorithm. And anything else you want to say to the people?
Hydrate, eat.
Or go hiking, you know? Go hiking and do a play in, like, the middle of the mountains.
Yeah.
Like, that sounds fun.
Yeah. But have fun, and we'll see you next week.
All right, bye.
Bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.